You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramil, credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts and to get the latest episodes. After a seven-month wait, we got the rematch we were looking for, waiting for, between Jimmy Butler and TJ Warren as the Heat took on the Indiana Pacers, a team that Miami will likely face in the upcoming playoffs. I'll recap the game, answer your questions, and talk about Miami's suddenly dynamic point guard situation. But the story was, after missing three games due to an ankle injury, Jimmy Butler was back in the lineup. We didn't know exactly what had happened to Jimmy. We didn't see any kind of injury in his last game, a loss to the Toronto Raptors, and the Heat had gone 1-2 without Butler in the lineup. But he was back, as was Goran Dragic, who had missed two straight with an ankle injury of his own. They were both making an impact early on as the Heat showed some tough defense, particularly against Warren, who had been averaging a bazillion points in the Orlando bubble. And the Heat quickly built a 12-point lead, but with the starters grabbing a quick breather, the bench defense let up a little bit, and the two teams went into the half tied at 48. But a 37-point monster offensive explosion came in the third quarter, and that's where Miami really blew things open, with Miami getting big contributions from Derrick Jones Jr., and the Heat would cruise to a 114-92 win over the Pacers. Obviously, everybody was tuned in for this game because of the matchup, the rematch, if you will, between Butler and Warren. And it was one that kind of fell flat, I'll be 100% honest with you. The excitement leading up to the game felt almost playoff-like in its intensity. Everybody changing avies on both sides of the equation. The Pacers fans going with the angry TJ Warren face. I'm not sure if that's a wise decision considering what happened last night. And then Heat fans conversely using Jimmy Butler blowing kisses at TJ Warren to change their avatar. It's kind of hilarious, to be honest with you. But a good old-fashioned rivalry is what it really felt like. Everybody was kind of pissed off. Pacers fans were talking some smack because Warren had been really, really, really hot during the offense, during the Orlando bubble. And I talked about that with Locked On Pacers host Tony East a couple of days ago. If you didn't catch that preview, a lot of what we talked about applied as well against in the actual game. But, you know, Warren just looked flat. Butler was engaged. He seemed like he was really focused on that. Tim Bontemps of ESPN reported that at one point during the third quarter, I want to say, Warren checked into the game, and he was at the scorer's table waiting to check into the game, and Jimmy Butler rushed right over there knowing that that was his matchup. So while Warren himself didn't guard Jimmy, which I'm sure cocky Heat Twitter will probably say was because he was scared of that matchup, Warren was guarded by Butler. And so he did a very good job of limiting him. Before the game, both teams were kind of minimizing any kind of hype or anything like that. Eric Spoelstra talked about both teams, you know, players using some kind of boost, needing something to kind of carry them through and focus. Nate McMillan, the Indiana Pacers head coach, downplayed it, said it was about the Heat versus the Pacers, not about Jimmy versus TJ. I got to say, Warren didn't really live up to the challenge, the expectation there. I think Butler was, you know, he wasn't going to start a fight. I don't think he could risk getting thrown out, ejected, and suspended maybe for the rest of the playoffs. But I thought it was going to be a lot more, I don't know, a lot more antagonistic. I thought they were going to needle each other. And after the game, Jimmy kind of just downplayed it again, saying, well, you know, that was just the Heat playing good defense. That was what our team, we had something extra for him. And TJ Warren said they're a well-coached team, didn't want to give any credit to Jimmy specifically. There's no real, there's tension there, but maybe it's not as, you know, there wasn't as much animosity as we had expected there to be. And from what Tony, again, Locked On Pacers host, Tony East told me, Warren seems to be a pretty quiet guy. He hasn't really accomplished much during his whole career. Whether he was a high draft pick or not, he had a couple of really bad years in Phoenix and hasn't really done enough to kind of talk any smack or anything like that. Hasn't built a reputation. For him to challenge Jimmy Butler, a multi-time All-Star and a potential Hall of Fame candidate, seems kind of ridiculous. You know, and as good as he's been in Orlando, he didn't really back it up. He didn't play well the last game either, and he's continued to struggle now, so I wonder if that hot shooting streak might be over. They're going to get into it a lot at this point because both teams seem destined not just for a matchup later on this week, but also for a playoff rematch. And if that's the case, there's a good chance you'll get an additional 5, 6, maybe even 8 games between these, although I wouldn't anticipate Miami going 7 against Indiana team because they just it was indicative of the whole game that this individual matchup felt a little flat. And at Miami, even though they were both tied at halftime, it just never really felt like they felt any pressure from the Pacers. The Pacers couldn't do anything to dominate or establish any sort of identity. Miami just kind of just clicked into gear, especially in the third quarter, tightened their defense, and then all of a sudden went on this great offensive spurt there. A lot of their shots weren't falling in the first half. That's where things got really ugly. They didn't score very well during this at any point in the game. They shot particularly badly. My second story of the game was that it was a very unusual win for Miami because they did not play so well. But despite that scoring drought or the kind of deficiency they had all Monday night, they were still able to play their style of defense. They shared the ball. And with Jimmy back in the lineup and able to get to the free throw line as often as he does, just controls the pace so much. I keep reiterating this, but it's such an important part of Jimmy's game and what Miami had been missing without Butler in the lineup. They don't have anybody to slow the bleeding down, to kind of just keep things at their pace. And Butler, while his shooting continues to be a problem, he took some really bad shots, a baseline shot that he actually knocked down. But other than that, he took a bad three. He just seems reluctant to shoot the ball. He took a couple three-pointers, actually, which was pretty surprising. Missed them both. And I don't know. I'm not sure if there's a concern here or not. I'm not sure if it's injury. It just seems so atypical considering what Jimmy was like prior to joining the Heat. But either way, look, it was a big win and an unusual one. Both teams shot pretty badly, and the Heat are a team that lives and dies by the three. It's usually worked for them, as they have been the most prolific team in the league from behind the perimeter. But against the Pacers, they shot just 32%, 13 of 40 from three-point range, and not particularly good. They had Kelly Olynyk missing 5 three-pointers. Jimmy Butler, again, missed 2 of his three-pointers. Goran Dragic, who had been shooting very well, maybe still a little rusty. He talked after the game about still experiencing a little bit of pain there and wanted to go back in there, show his teammates that he had, they could count on him, and he was crucial. He was particularly good as the team's starting point guard. I should have mentioned that at the start, that Goran did was inserted into the starting lineup in place of Kendrick Nunn, who is still under quarantine after having left the bubble. Tyler Hero had started against the Phoenix Suns the game before, but he was back on the bench for this particular game, and it didn't really seem to impact Hero's performance, as I'll get into that a little bit later. But despite the poor shooting, Miami did have a solid win overall, and a lot of that had to do with some really key performances from Derrick Jones. I have to say, Derrick has been not as good. I had questioned what his role would be when entering the bubble because, he does not score particularly well. He had struggled as any kind of offensive spark plug. He doesn't make plays for others, and if his defense is maybe not as strong as it could be, there just doesn't seem to be much of a place for him. And against the Pacers, it was evident that he can have a high-impact game. He was really good defensively. He finished with a steal and a block. But offensively, he also pulled down 5 rebounds and finished 18 points. Most of those coming with a connection with Goran, coming on lobs where they were just... Goran just found him. So the pick-and-roll combination between Goran and Derrick Jones seemed to work particularly well. And I wonder if that's something that we'll see more of down the stretch here. Bam Adebayo struggled a little bit. He keeps showing a willingness to take a long-range shot, maybe either a mid-range shot. He didn't take any three-pointers against the Pacers, but he did take a couple 15, 18-footers. So that's encouraging. At the same time, I think he's exerting so much of his energy on the defensive end, and perhaps as he continues to recover from his diagnosis of the COVID-19 virus, I wonder whether or not he's just not at 100% yet. They're going to need him to step up at some point, and he just isn't able to really do much offensively. He doesn't get to the line the same way Jimmy does, except for that one time where he had a career high, 18 free throw attempts. We have to continue to monitor to see whether or not Bam continues to have some kind of struggles or anything like that. defensively, that wasn't a problem. He was great. But offensively, you'd like to see a little bit more consistency from him. And despite everything else, though, they're adding insult to injury for Pacers fans. Victor Oladipo, who did not have a great game. He had 14 points in 28 minutes, although he did shoot 3 of 5 from three-point range. He was seen during the game helping up both Bam Adebayo and Jimmy Butler. He was laughing it up during the game with Heat players, and then afterwards was seen talking with a handful of Heat players, including Jimmy and Bam. Of course, a lot of Pacers fans took to Twitter to kind of complain about Oladipo and why he was trending. And, you know, it does seem like there's a connection there, obviously. I'm not sure that you want to take too much of it. Kind of interesting from a Heat fan perspective to see what that was like. I'm sure that Victor does associate with Heat players and that he does have some interest in joining the Heat at some point. Something I've talked about for, well, it seems like a couple years now. But it was just interesting to see Pacers fans melt down after the game, a game that they had believed they would have a strong edge on, edge against Miami, especially with Warren playing as well as he did. And then to add, again, insult to see Victor Oladipo fraternizing with the enemy. they weren't too happy about it. They were already saying, good, we don't want him here anyway. Trade him. He'll never get back to full health, which is a legitimate concern. But just an interesting thing, and good overall game. I think that's the takeaway from all this, is that it was a good game. Miami found a way to win despite some poor shooting. In the next segment, I'll go through the good, the bad, and the ugly and answer your questions about tonight's game. Obviously, the Pacers could have used some support tonight, and it doesn't matter if you're a professional athlete, a stay-at-home parent, or if you spend 8 hours a day in an uncomfortable office chair. Everyone, including the Pacers, needs support to make it through the day. Luckily, our friends at CBDMD have an amazing duo of products that can help you relax, regroup, and recharge when life gets chaotic. CBD Freeze with Menthol is an award-winning product that offers instant cooling relief for muscles and joints in a convenient and easy-to-use roller or a shareable squeeze tube. And CBD Recover combines CBD with anti-inflammatory compounds like Arnica and vitamin B6 to give you the support you need when it matters most. And to make it even easier to try this amazing duo of topicals and everything else that CBDMD has to offer, they're offering all of our listeners 25% off your next order when you use the promo code NBA at checkout. Once again, that's CBDMD.com, promo code NBA for 25% off your purchase of all superior CBD oil products from CBDMD. Subscribe to the show on your favorite app to listen to podcasts and to always get the latest episodes by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. Good, the bad, and the ugly. Let's start off with the good, obviously. Miami's guard situation. After Tyler Hero had somewhat of an offensive explosion as the starting point guard against the Phoenix Suns, he followed that up with a really solid performance off the bench against the Pacers. 17 points. 7 of 11 shooting, 3 of 6 from three-point range. And Goran Dragic contributed 11 points of his own, 5 of 16 for the floor. Not a good shooting night from him, unfortunately. That three-point shot was not falling at the rate that we're accustomed to seeing from Goran. But it didn't really matter because he was able to make an impact. Now, obviously, you want Goran to be able to knock that three-point shot. I think it keeps defenses on their toes when they have to respect that shot a little bit more. I think Goran has enough of a reputation as a shooter around the league where they're going to respect that shot regardless, but you still want it to keep defenses honest by being able to knock it down at least at a 30 to 40% clip. That was not the case against the Pacers. But I will say that Goran just seemed to be playing at a very high level, you know, despite the lack of shooting and despite the ankle injury. He really dictated the terms in offense. He was able to get to the line, was able to really control the pick-and-roll situation. Again, that relationship with Derrick Jones Jr. was interesting to see because Goran, not known as a particularly good lob threat as the passer, but just seemed to have an innate connection. He was drawing multiple defenders when he was handling the ball, and that opened things up for Derrick to cut to the lane. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, Indiana missing Domantas Sabonis, not a great defender, but a guy who can at least help stop the flow of attack, or you know, at least, you know, stick on to the role man in those pick and roll situations. But this was not the case without him in the lineup. They just really didn't really have anything. Miles Turner, a little bit aggressive on pick and rolls. He tends to kind of just try to double team the ball handler. And while that might work in some situations, I think Goran is savvy enough to find a way to get that ball out of the double team. And again, it worked on Monday night. He was able to find Derrick Jones Jr. cutting to the rim. And he just, you know, with Derrick's athleticism, he doesn't need a lot of space to finish there. And Tyler, similarly, making opportunities for others, only finished with two assists, but as he gets more and more comfortable as an offensive spark plug, and I think, you know, his confidence is pretty clear, he'll be able to change things around on offense, make things easier for his teammates. He's going to draw double teams. I think the book on him is that he is a confident shooter who can use his handle effectively and of course, shoot well from the perimeter. And if that's the case, then I think people will start to respect that shot coming from him. It doesn't, you know, it helps that he is cocky and that he is going to take his shots whether they're falling or not. And that's a good thing for him because I think he's a young player that shows a lot of promise. This question comes in from Josh, who emailed me during the game to ask, how long can Goran Dragic keep this production rate up? And is he integral to our hopeful playoff runs in the upcoming year or two? So this is a big question there. How long Dragic can keep this production rate up is pretty difficult to answer. I think given his age, given the fact that he is not injury prone, but an injury can sap away his speed. And if that's the case, he's not nearly as effective as he could be. You can't assess whether or not Goran will be able to keep it up. He is essential, to Miami's playoff run because we see that he's able to dictate terms on offense. He's a much better point guard than either Tyler or Kendrick Nunn. Obviously, without Kendrick in the lineup, Miami has looked much particularly dynamic from their guards. They're not giving up much defensively. And so I think if Kendrick's not scoring, there's not much value for him out on the floor, something that I've reiterated time and time again. And it was pretty evident on Tuesday that, you know, even without the kind of defense that maybe Kendrick could provide that's a little bit higher than Hero's or Goran's, not much, but a little bit higher, with his offensive struggles continue to hurt Miami. And you need somebody like Goran or Tyler to be able to initiate offense and create shots for themselves and others. As far as whether or not he's an integral part of our playoff runs in the next year or two, that's almost impossible to say. For one, because he's a free agent. I've said time and time again, he wants to be here. I think the Heat would love to keep him here. He is a Heat lifer. He has embraced his culture, the city. His family loves it here. And I think this is the place for him. I think I could see him taking a little bit less money in the long term to be here for a long time. As obviously the situation with a big time free agent like Giannis Antetokounmpo or Victor Oladipo or somebody along those lines always dictates how Miami will move forward. But I think he could take a big balloon payment next season if they're willing to offer that, and then take a smaller deal over the rest of his career. He's older. Again, injuries are a problem for players of his age, and you don't want that to continue to sap away at what athleticism he has there. So I think he could be kept at a reasonable bargain here. You hate to evaluate a player that has meant so much to this franchise as Goran just based on injuries and you know, undercutting his chances of making any more money during the rest of his NBA career. But I think that's a realistic assessment and situation of where Goran stands. You know, if he can stay relatively healthy and not have any major injuries, he's going to have some nicks here and there, some bumps and bruises. I think he can be a solid contributor. I think that's all you need from him. I don't think he'll be a starter. I think the six-man role is best for him. And depending on who you acquire, whether it's an Oladipo or a Bradley Beal or somebody else like that, somebody who's more of a secondary ball handler, you can insert Tyler Hero into the starting lineup who's part of this team moving forward, or keep Kendrick Nunn or somebody along those lines, maybe even lock in somebody else as a point guard, some other free agent that I can't think of right now who could just at least be a ball handler and an initiator. I still think Goran can play a big role. I would say it's not as big a role as it's been, and certainly you can't count on him based on injuries and age and things of that sort, but he'll be here, hopefully, and he'll be able to find a way to contribute just because he can score from the perimeter, he can still get to the line, and he is wily enough to use his size and what athleticism he has to draw fouls on a pretty consistent basis. This other question comes in and asks, do you think Goran or Hero will start in the playoffs instead of Kendrick Nunn? This question comes in from TZA Mac, longtime friend of the show. I think Goran will start. I think we saw that against the Pacers, that Eric Spoelstra just has too much value, too much faith in what Goran can do, that even though Hero makes a lot of sense as a starter, being somewhat younger and a guy who can create off the dribble in a way that Goran might not be able to at this point in his career, he still went with Dragic. Again, despite the ankle injury, despite the age concerns and everything else, he trusts Goran Dragic implicitly. There is a strong connection between the two there, and that's pretty evident. So I just think Kendrick, in some way, has played himself out of the rotation. You can still get a boost from him offensively off the bench. He's not going to be expected to initiate offense, especially if Tyler is in the starting lineup. In the key backup lineup there. So if he's part of that second unit, Tyler is going to be creating offense. And Nunn can play off the ball a little bit, and maybe he'll be able to knock down those shots at a higher rate than he has been so far. And that's how I see it. The bad, unfortunately, Kelly Olynyk, after I talked him up so consistently about his consistency and about his offense and just the fact that he was playing at such a high level, making plays for others, Kelly has had two straight games now where he continues to struggle, and that was the case against the Pacers as well. Finished 3 of 11 from the floor, 0 from 5 from three-point range. Did have 7 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal. So I guess an okay game, not a great game, not a good game either, but an okay game. He wasn't a glaring weakness. Finished with a 0 plus-minus rating. So I think that pretty much tells a story about Kelly Olynyk. And this question comes from Steve Kolakidis, who asks, is Kelly taking too many threes when he's having an off night? Once you miss a three, surely you change up what you're doing. That's Steve's question there. And Steve, I don't think that's the case. Most shooters will tell you that their responsibility is to keep taking shots, to find a way to get through it, that you hope that you get into a rhythm and those shots will start to fall. And that's what Kelly does. He is a good shooter, without a doubt, even if he's having bad nights like he did yesterday. And I think it's helps him to kind of open up the offense a little bit, stretch the floor, and that's what he's out there for, is to be a long-range threat, a guy who can put the ball down to kind of supplement his three-point shooting, who can make plays for others because of his passing ability. So I don't think he's taking too many threes. You'd like him to knock down, similarly to what Goran did, take those, at least hit a couple of those shots to keep the defenses honest. But for both of them, it's a similar situation, is where, you have to keep shooting the three because defenses have to respect that outside shooting, and that creates mismatches or openings for other teammates to be able to get to the rim and maybe get an open look or an easier shot at the rim. So, Steve, I got to say that I think Kelly should continue to take those threes, and hopefully he'll catch another hot streak at some point during the playoffs, because he just looks a little bit uncomfortable out there from long range. Speaking of uncomfortable, it was pretty ugly to see TJ Warren just score 12 points. At first, I thought he might be able to catch fire a little bit. He did shoot 5 of 14 and 2 of 6 from three-point range, finished with 12 points again, 5 rebounds. And I don't know that it was necessarily Miami's defense. I'd love to be able to put all of the credit on Miami's defense. And while it was active in trying to limit Warren, some of those shots that he was missing were pretty wide open. He just seemed to kind of shy away from the moment. And then later on in the game, Nate McMillan just didn't seem to want to go to Warren as the answer to stopping Miami's offensive explosion. They weren't looking to Warren to create his shot to maybe change the flow of the game a little bit back in Indiana's favor. And then I saw somebody, I can't recall now who, on Twitter maybe hinting at the fact that they weren't using Warren the way they have in the past few games to kind of save something against a likely playoff opponent in Miami. That's possible. I think it's something to consider, is that maybe we did not see the full TJ Warren effect. I also think that Miami has a way of guarding him effectively, whether it's Jimmy or Jay Crowder or Andre Iguodala or Bam Adebayo or somebody else. If they can do this to Giannis Antetokounmpo for a consistent level, I think they can keep TJ Warren from getting comfortable. And Caitlin Cooper of SB Nation's Indy Cornrows, she continues to be very, she praises Miami and their ability to make Warren uncomfortable. And I think it's been pretty obvious that as good as Warren has been against lesser opponents, Miami's defense is on another level when they're particularly keyed in and when Jimmy is healthy and in the lineup. So Which opponent should the Heat want to face in the first round? Because the playoffs are right around the corner. I'll continue answering your questions in the next segment. But to answer all your betting needs, MyBookie.com is the answer for you, because sports are back, baby. I've been waiting for this day since March, and now that it's here, I've only got one thing on my mind. That's MyBookie. It's a home run, a slam dunk, a triple overtime game-winning shot, all wrapped into one. I love it. You love it. And that should be all you need to hear in order to start betting today. MyBookie has up-to-the-minute odds on all your favorite teams from Major League Baseball, who their season is now underway. There's never been a better time to start playing with MyBookie. It's easy. You bet, you win, they pay. If you're feeling good about your team's chances this year, be sure to check out MyBookie's World Series future bets. Nothing shows you believe in your squad like betting on them before the season's even begun. But why stop with baseball? Smart bettors are always looking towards the future, and in this case, that means basketball, hockey, and football. MyBookie is already accepting bets on all your favorite NBA, NHL, and NFL games, and there's never been a better time to start exploring the world of online sports betting. Join today. MyBookie will match your deposit 100%, plus they'll toss you a free $10 MLB future wager. All you got to do is enter the promo code LOCKEDONNBA when signing up. Remember, at MyBookie, the terms are simple. You bet, you win, they pay. Reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Josh sends in another question via email. He writes, I always trust Eric Spoelstra, but his reluctance to change lineups when they aren't working is becoming glaringly noticeable. Do you think it's just the seeding games and he's testing the waters, or could this be a problem come playoffs? I think we've seen a lot of flexibility from Spo, Josh, to be honest with you. Obviously, changing some things in the line and the starting rotation, that's been a huge thing from him. And he's talked about it recently, that it was a difficult decision for him to take Myers out, that it wasn't a knock on Myers. And he acknowledged how successful Miami had been with Myers in the lineup. But to go with Jay Crowder, to see that he's got the hot hand and to use his versatility on defense has been an additional wrinkle there that opponents just haven't been able to prepare for. And as far as other rotations, other lineups, you know, there's only so much you can do. You try to find the right combination. Sometimes Kelly Olynyk pays off, sometimes he doesn't. Andre Iguodala had been really, really steady and consistent and versatile from all aspects on both defense and offense. And against the Pacers, he just wasn't much of a factor. I think there's just so much you can do. I know there were some concerns against the Suns where there was a particularly bad lineup. I can't recall exactly now the particulars of who was available, but again, that was without Goran Dragic, without Jimmy Butler. I wouldn't worry about it too much. I think he can recognize when things are starting to get a little out of hand, and I know he has been a little stubborn in the past, and that has been a concern. I just don't see that it's going to be much of a concern moving forward. It's been a huge indicator of growth, at least to me, that he was able to take Myers Leonard out of the starting lineup and not play him since. And that could be for a variety of different reasons, and maybe he's just trying to hold his cards until the playoffs begin, but it's been interesting. I think the seeding games are an opportunity for exploratory research. I think you see a lot of that going on around the leagues. Teams are starting to already angle their way towards different playoff seeds and change things around. You saw maybe going with a particular big as a ball handler. There's been other things taking place here and there, and I think that certainly is the case when you look at rotations and players that are coming in and out of the lineup and when they come in and out of the lineup. So there's certainly an element of that. I'm not too worried about it. I'll be honest with you. I think we can kind of get frustrated in the moment when we see five guys out there struggling and the offense isn't working. But there are moments when that could work. I know you can kind of look at plus minus numbers for any kind of five-man rotation and say, well, clearly that lineup isn't working. It could look a little ugly. You want to have elements of playmaking, shot creation, long-range shooting, and rebounding. Sometimes you can get blown out. Sometimes it doesn't matter if you're getting beat on the boards. That's just the reality, is that it's not essential to win a game. Against the Pacers, sure, the Heat did control the rebounding edge pretty consistently, but we've seen other games in the past where they lose a rebounding battle pretty big, and it doesn't really matter. They still find a way to win the game. Slick Mick sends in this question via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Should the Heat want to play Indiana or Philly in the first round, given Ben Simmons' injury? For those of you who don't know, Ben Simmons underwent surgery on his knee, a knee subluxation fluxation, I believe that's the terminology. I'm not reading it at this point in time, but unfortunately for Ben, undergoes a knee injury that forces surgery, and he is out for the rest of the season. So Philadelphia's chances at being a favorite to move on to the finals, if you look at how this team had been assembled in the offseason, I think a lot of people, myself included, really liked Philly's chances of making a deep playoff run. They never quite seemed to gel, and now with Simmons suffering a knee injury, their chances are likely done. I can't see them getting enough from their other backups and things of that sort. Shake Milton, as solid as he's been, it's been somewhat inconsistent. Josh Richardson, he would have to have a monster string of performances. He's capable of it, I think. I will still continue to stand for Richardson and believe that he can and do a lot for a team. But to Slick Mick's question, I don't know that it really matters. I know that if you ask Eric Spoelstra, he'll say he doesn't care who the opponent is. They're a threat with Joel Embiid, as good as Miami can be at limiting what he can do. You can send Bam Adebayo at him and try to keep him from going off. I guess Philly is probably the better team to face, but it's not in Miami's future one way or the other. They can't control who they face. They could lose the last two games on purpose, but you could see Philadelphia doing the same, and then they would retain the sixth seed, and Miami would maybe go on to be the fifth seed and still play Indiana as the fourth seed. I think you want to be able to establish a rhythm and have good habits moving into the playoffs. So I think from the Heat fan perspective, you're happy with whatever opponent you can. I think Miami matches up well with Indiana. I think Domantas Sabonis is not going to be able to bounce back from his injury in order to be a factor in the playoffs. And while he does change things when he comes back, if he comes back, I think Miami could still beat him and the Pacers, even with him in the lineup. So I'm not too concerned about what opponent Miami's facing. I think Philadelphia is the obvious answer because Joel Embiid is suffering an ankle injury. He's going to miss an upcoming game as well. It's just they seem the more realistic opponent as far as they're beat up and maybe they don't have the kind of depth that you might face in Indiana. But I think Miami can beat both teams. They can beat anybody when they're playing their best. And I think you asked Jimmy Butler, and he spoke about it after the game. When Miami is playing as well as they can and everybody's healthy, they're capable of knocking off Milwaukee. They're capable of knocking off the Clippers. They can beat any team in this league. So that's what you should focus on. Recyclops, a friend of the show, asks, which young guy, if any, do you see taking a leap in a playoff? I remember Justice Winslow taking a sort of leap against Philly a couple of years ago and wonder if something similar may be coming from Hero. Have to agree with you there, Recyclops. I think Tyler Hero is most poised there. Kendrick Nunn, I continue to not see it. I think we've already seen extra elements in Duncan Robinson's game. He's still a youngish player, and I don't know that we're going to see much more out of him. But from Hero, he seems built for the moment. He seems engaged. He seems ready to take those chances. He doesn't shy away from creating offensive opportunities for himself, and he continues to do the work. It's something that we've been very impressed with, I think, from a media perspective, from a fan perspective. You see Tyler Hero continuing to work and try to get better, and all of his teammates speak about it. Coaches rave about his work ethic, and given that, I think Hero could certainly have a few games there where he could be clutch. Or he could have a monster game where he put up 20-plus points, maybe even close to 30. That seems a little unlikely given that you have Jimmy and Goran and everybody else. But with the right opportunity, I think you could have a big game, and I think he seems to be the young player most likely to take that kind of leap. I don't know if it's much of a leap because we've seen these moments from him throughout the regular season too. I think when it came to Justice, what made that different was that he had a little bit more comfort level with his shooting. He seemed like he was really excited about the kind of antagonistic intensity of the playoffs. I don't think Hero's there, although I do like Hero. He doesn't take any crap from anybody. You see him going at players that want to challenge him. And so I think there's that element, that similarly to what we saw from Justice a couple of years ago. But, it should be interesting. I don't know who that guy is in Indiana if we do face them in the playoffs. I don't know who's going to challenge Tyler Hero and who's going to try to make it difficult for him and see whether or not Tyler responds to the challenge. It could be – I saw it, I think, against Wes Matthews. I think Matthews kind of took it a little personally against Tyler Hero. I could see that being a factor. It should be interesting. Again, I think it's he's shown a lot of promise, and I think he's a big part of Miami's future moving forward. Speaking of the future, the Heat have one more game versus Chris Paul and the Oklahoma City Thunder, who are trying to position themselves in the Western Conference playoffs before a rematch versus the Pacers takes place on Friday. The league has now scheduled that game for 4 p.m., and that will air on ESPN. Of course, I'll have a recap for you after each game. Be sure to subscribe and follow this podcast to get the latest episode of Locked On Heat as soon as it's out. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you, as always, for your support.
Yeah! Back it up, D.